that's fun because I can always zero in on people really getting down. And even if I see some people not getting down, I might keep like looking over in that zone and being like, wait till they're getting down and be like, you gotcha. And that's some of the fun. That's my entertainment while I'm going through it.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Musicians Tell Me Secrets podcast, the only show that tells you what people at the top of the music industry don't want you to know, like the fact that they're all a bunch of incestuous cannibals who practice ritualistic sacrifices and routine pedophilia. I mean, but let's be honest, that shouldn't surprise anyone who works in the music industry. Guys, first of all, I want to apologize for last week. I did promise you the Marshmello article that, reveals his secret identity. And we worked on this article, me and a few other music journalists collaborated, in order to find the, secret identity of Marshmello. We matched up, like, voice clips, and, you know, we looked at people he hung out with, you know, when he was making appearances, who was there, who wasn't there. And long story short, the article just kind of disappeared. I can't seem to find it, which is really fucking weird. I don't know who's behind it, but, you know, I feel like I've jerked you around long enough, so I'm just gonna come out and say it. If I can find the article, I'm still gonna post it to RyanStabile.com in the show notes at some point, so I'll let you know about that. Marshmello is actually the music producer and DJ, goes by the name of Jaws, also known as Sam Vogel. He's the founder of Byte Records. You can believe me or not, I don't really fucking care, but just know that somewhere in the far reaches of the internet, probably tucked in between the 10 millionth cat video and some weird tentacle porn on 4chan, is the Marshmello article that lays out all the details and facts for exactly why Marshmello is actually Jaws. Now, a lot of people believe that, you know, the point of the helmet, the point of the hat, is so that, you know, anyone can basically be Marshmello, and anyone can, you know, perform. That it's a collection of different DJs who, you know, they share the Marshmello head, and they share the identity of Marshmello when he's performing live. But, you know, based on all this research and all the facts that we collected, that's actually not the case. I'd say at least 90% of the time, it's definitely Jaws. This is exactly what I'm talking about at the top of the episode. The albino shape-shifting lizard bitches that work in the music industry, and by that I mean interns, they found a way to delete this fucking article. I was preaching the truth. I mean, what do you want from me? What do you want to bet that a year from now, every episode of this podcast is going to be deleted? I'm going to be soaking in a vat of acid somewhere in John Legend's basement. Ah, well, what can you do? Anyway, today we'll be listening to a conversation I had with Jason Han of String Cheese Incident and Yoto, world-famous percussionist, that took place at Electric Zoo 2015 on Governor's Island in New York. Jason Han is the percussionist for String Cheese Incident and Yoto, and I really think that he's one of the most underrated and most talented percussionists in the music industry right now. So if you haven't heard of Yoto, it's been described to me by Jason Han, actually. He described Yoto as basically String Cheese Incident on about 10 grams of mushrooms. Jason has also worked with the most diverse range of award-winning recording artists that I have ever seen, including Dr. Dre, Isaiah Hayes, to name a few. I mean, the sheer number of prolific musicians Jason has worked with in such a short amount of time is truly outstanding. And I'll go ahead and put together a list of all the artists that he's collaborated with on my website, RyanStabile.com. If you're interested, take a look at that. I mean, it's everyone from, you know, like, soul, R&B, international artists, hip-hop artists, electronic EDM artists. I mean, it's truly fucking astounding. Anyway, enough of that. A quick aside before I get into the interview today. You know, my videographer showed up 10 minutes late for this interview, and when he eventually shows up, he pulls me aside before the interview, and, like, he has some big secret to tell me, and then he whispers softly in my ear and says, "Hey, you know, I just used the porta-potty, and you're not gonna believe what I found." Now, when someone pulls you aside and feels compelled to tell you that they just used a fucking porta-potty at a music festival in New York, And you're not going to believe what I found? I mean, there are a few ways to respond to that.
I mean, I told him right then and there that you shouldn't be hooking up with music festival thoughts. You know that. Then my videographer, whose name is Tony, by the way, he holds up the biggest bag of cocaine I've ever seen anyone sneak into a music festival with before. So while Jason is waiting for us to start the interview, Tony and I sneak off to this little area in the green room at Izu that they have specifically reserved for people to do drugs. I mean, I thought it was pretty thoughtful of them, the production, to set up, a spot just for artists and people working the event to, you know, just pop in there real quick and do a bump or, you know, smoke some DMT or, you know, just slam some black tar heroin if that's what you're into. So anyway, Tony and I do a couple of lines of this strange white powder that he finds on the floor of a porta potty, and then we proceed to do the Jason Hand interview. We talk to him, it goes pretty well. About an hour later, Tony pulls me aside again, and he says, "Man, I'm not feeling anything from that coke. Do you think we should do more?" And you know, since I'm always the voice of reason, I go, "Fuck yes, we should do more." We do a few more lines of the bathroom blow while sitting on the lawn in between stages at this festival. And then a group of girls sees us doing this, they come over and they do a bunch of lines with us. I mean, hey, when you find a bag of drugs on the ground, why be stingy with it, right? So we go dance a little bit with these girls. You know, a short time after, Tony comes up to me again and says, "Man, I don't think that was coke." And I go, "Well, shit, man, whatever it was, we did a bunch of this stuff. What do you think it was?" And I swear to God, he goes, "I know it's not coke because my dick always gets hard when I do coke, but now my dick looks like a snail." Well, fuck, man, I wonder what it was. Now, keep in mind that it's still pretty early in the day, and we still have a few more interviews to do. In fact, it wasn't until we sat down with Adventure Club that Tony and I both came to the realization at the same time that it actually wasn't coke, it was ketamine. Now, keep in mind that when you're doing coke, you do quite a bit of it, right? I mean, you're snorting coke off things just because you think it'll be funny. Like, "Hey, pull out your tit, let me do some coke off it. Hey, I dare to do coke off the hood of that cop car. Hey, is that a snake in the grass? Yeah, man, do you think I can do coke off it?" Meanwhile, with ketamine, you normally do significantly smaller quantities, right? I mean, bumps instead of lines. That way, you can work your way up, because what happens when you do too much Special K? You become the dude in a K-hole at a music festival. And no one wants to be that dude. I mean, there are hundreds of videos all over the internet of people at music festivals doing stupid shit when they're stuck in a K-hole. And the best are those people who wear those stupid fucking spoons around their necks, so they can go around and sample free drugs from other people. I mean, what dirt bag invented those? Someone who obviously had a lot of spoons, but no money for drugs, I guess. Anyway, just as Tony and I are setting up for the Adventure Club interview, we both start to really feel it. So there's a video of that interview. Tony actually does the interview, because he's a little Adventure Club fanboy or whatever. I'll post the video. That's going to be next week's podcast, so be sure to check back for that. In the video, Tony dips in and out of a K-hole while interviewing Adventure Club. It is a true gem, you guys. You gotta see this. Anyway, so a little bit of clarification before I play the clip. At the beginning of the interview, when I asked Jason what his set list looks like, and if you've never experienced Yoto or String Cheese Incident, what you might not get is that their sets are always 100% improvised. You know, String Cheese Incident is considered a jam band, and I think that label turns a lot of people off from listening to them, because jam bands get terrible PR. When people think of jam bands, they usually think that, you know, you need a clinical amount of psychedelics in order to enjoy them. And while Jason might look like the dude he used to buy weed from in college, and don't get me wrong, if I saw Jason walking around a music festival, I would 100%, he would be the first person I go to if I'm trying to buy psychedelics. But from a technical standpoint, what jam bands like String Cheese Incident and Yoto do during live performances is actually pretty fucking impressive. So in this interview, Jason explains how he uses the audience to determine the pace of their performances. Jason also explains how he balances the time between String Cheese Incident, Yoto, and working with other amazing artists, be it in the studio or on tour. He also talks a little bit about the equipment that he and Travis use during their live show versus in the studio. So if you're a musician, if you're a recording artist, if you perform at all, you know, there's a lot of value here. And if not, well, I mean, fuck, if you're just a a fan. There's also some funny gags in here for you. So there is a video of this interview, and in the video, if it looks like Jason and I just finished having the best gay sex of our lives, well, that's because we did. Here's an interesting secret. A lot of gays look at Jason and they think that he's a top because he looks like a bear. Meanwhile, a lot of people look at me and think that I'm a twink because my entire style is cultivated around something called twink fashion. But for those who know me, they know that, if nothing else, I'm perhaps best known for sticking my dick where it doesn't belong. So Jason is a bottom. He's always been a bottom. However, what many people don't know about him is that, including his wife, by the way, is that he's a power bottom. So, he's fucking aggressive with it. We did get that on video too, but I was asked not to share that. I will respect Jason's wishes in that. If you take away nothing else from this podcast, you should get that looks can be deceiving. Take a guess at where you could find the video of Jason and I having intimate post-coital conversation. Here's a hint. I already said it once earlier in the show. Don't make me fucking repeat myself. I will not fucking repeat myself. All right, one more time. It's ryanstabile.com, ryanstabile.com. That name again is ryanstabile.com. I'm thinking about doing a commercial for the website, and I'm gonna have a little jingle. I'm gonna basically blackmail all the musicians who told me their dirty secrets. I'm gonna blackmail them into making a little jingle for me. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, here's Jason Henn.
Esteban here at Electric Zoo, nice. 2015.
Yeah.
With Jason from Yoto.
Hello.
So, spring season, so.
Yes, sir.
So, what do you have? Here's an interesting question for you. What do you have planned for your set today?
Oh, wow, that is interesting. let me turn on my time machine and see what we're going to do. We'll probably start off just making up stuff.
Yeah.
And then we'll probably start making up more stuff. And then at about the 20-minute mark, we'll probably make the tempo a little bit faster and make up some more stuff.
Okay.
You know, when we do our sets, there's a little, if you listen to our sets, there's a little bit of a thing to it, how we hang out at a certain BPM at a certain amount of time and go with it. But really, like, you know, we'll watch the, at a festival, we'll watch the crowd who's in there, you know, before our set and whatever they're vibing with, and we really feel it out. This definitely felt like we had to, like, get their attention. So we kind of, so we'll probably come out guns blazing. It's a little weird talking about the future and the past. But
you know, you hear a lot of DJs and a lot of performers talking about how they kind of vibe off the crowd and they feel the crowd, and that's how they, you know, choose what song to play next. But, you know, especially with Yota and what you guys do, every set is unique. I think that's something really. How do you vibe off the crowd like that? When your sets kind of progress into, you know, one long song, and every set you do is pretty much an album itself.
Yeah, it really is like, let's say if we start off almost too aggressive and it felt like it was a little too high impact. You know, we both feel it because at some point we'll do some breakdown, and you can just hear the crowd's reaction and be like, oh wow, they really like that. Let's hang out in this little more mellow zone. Yeah. Or we've been going hard for a while. Let's just, you know, guide it ourselves a little bit and just take them on a journey. Because especially at a festival out here, the kids can go like the whole night going rah, 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 you know, they can do all of it. But then if we take the reins for a while and be like, oh well, let's bring you to this little island over here.
Yeah.
And then you just see how they react, and if you get the sense right away whether they want to follow it or not. And if they don't, then that's cool that we tried it there. We'll get back to something else that feels familiar, and then we'll try it again later or something. You know, it's weird like that. But we're almost 1,000 shows in, so it feels like really comfortable to, you know, read it and guide it. And sometimes we fall on our face still, but, you know, that's all part of it. That's all what makes it fun, really.
So when you're performing, I mean, do you have your eyes on what you're doing, or do you glance at the crowd, or where is your attention?
I think it's mostly, at least for mine, Travis might have a different experience, but I feel like I'm listening to somebody else play, you know? Right. And at this point, it feels like everything else, the hands and everything, more react to, you know, my ears. Like, if I'm listening to something really badass, what do I want to be hearing now? And then hopefully, I practice enough, or I know my tools enough that I have access to, that I can make that happen, and or come close to it. So it's like the ears first for listening and vibing, and then sometimes you just don't have a choice with the lights. Sometimes the lights are right in your face. Like today was great because the lights aren't as big a factor, and I can really look into the crowd, and that's fun because I can always zero in on people really getting down. And even if I see some people not getting down, I might keep like looking over in that zone and be like, wait till they're getting down, and be like, you gotcha, you know.
Yeah.
And that's some of the fun. That's my entertainment while I'm going through it. Yeah.
Absolutely. So tell me about the gear you use during that
live action. Oh, wow. In Travis's zone, he has a bunch of synths set up, like hardware synths. He's got, I think, an MS-2000 rack. He uses a Gaia, Roland Gaia keyboard. I don't know. You know, sometimes he changes the setup, so I don't know. All off the top of my head. He uses some Chaos Pro oscillators. I think he has two of them in his setup. And then in my world, I'm playing acoustic drums. Triggers on them. And I have four iPads. And those iPads are all linked to my computer. And they're also linked to Travis's computer. So I can do like live remixing type stuff, live stutters, and live effects on my voice. And then I have one pad that I dedicate for, it's like my cheater pad. So if I do like a lyric or something like that, I know like a ton of songs, but I don't know the words to any of the songs. But so it's my little cheater thing. So if I hear a song in my head, and I'm like, God, that would be great to do that now. If I remember it after the show, I'll look up the lyrics and put it on that iPad. So if it comes around again, I can, you know, just do it. Just to have fun to do stuff on the fly like that. And then treat it like another, like dropping an acapella into a remix, except it's me singing it live.
So how does that translate to recording in the studio?
Oh, wow. Well, it's, it's been a little while since we recorded in the studio. Mostly because of that, we record our shows every night.
Yeah.
We're pretty happy with our process and stuff. And we're really proud of our albums that we did in the studio. But, it doesn't feel as challenging to take time from the schedule to go set up and do the same thing that we normally do live.
Yeah.
So much. You know?
A studio album, such as, Street Jesus and Mario, you can't really, it's completely different than live performance.
Absolutely.
So in that respect, why go to the studio and record things when you could just be putting out these live recordings?
Absolutely,
There's a better way for the audience to listen, to engage in the vibe of the energy that you guys do.
Yeah, and if it was something like where we're trying to really develop songs, the funny part about some of those recordings is that people will request us to do songs for them, and then we got to be like, oh, that's not what we do, really. It's like, really, but that's a cool song. Like, well, we never practice it, so we're not going to be able to play it. And so it's a weird thing. But I think ultimately it just doesn't feel as like the next thing or the next challenge to do. What would be more challenging is, say, if we recorded all of our stems and just, put them out there to let other people mess with the stems and make their own thing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So, yeah.
So how do you balance time between strings and say,
It's tricky. We've done a little bit. We've got a little more of a handle on it this year. Before, we would do wait for the string cheese schedule to come into place, and then we would book almost everything Yoda around that. That was nuts because then you'd go for like 7 months of not having a weekend off or something. That would be insane. And so now we backed it off to where we're out almost every weekend, but we'll have like say Sunday through Wednesday off. Even still, we're in a little more comfortable zone now, but I think the beginning of next year is going to be like taking a few more chunks of time off. So you can feel like, you can enjoy all the reasons for doing this, Try to do a little vacation, see the road.
The fans are just demanding it,
Do
you not get enough entertainment? Come on.
And it's a, it's a little tricky thing too, because when you're used to doing it, you're used to covering your cities, taking care of your fans, and doing that. So, you just hope if you do take a little break that it's all, around for you to, come back. And that's a weird thing with music, like, how fast, music cycles in and out.
Oh, yeah.
Even DJs come and go. There's very few DJs that are, like, at these high positions for, like, a long, a lot of years.
Yeah.
And it's the same with music a little bit, right? When you take a break, sometimes you latch on to other things and think about that. So you just go for it. But you really got to take care of yourself, because if you're taking care of yourself, then that's ultimately going to lead to better performance.
And, you know, the style of music you're playing does cycle out. Just start another side project.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's true. It's about keeping it fresh and keeping it inspired. Yeah. Just in general, doing music. So.
All right, so Esteban and Jason, signing off from Izu 2015, The Zen Den.
That was Jason Han and yours truly. Show notes and video from this interview are available at ryanstabile.com. I'm not going to do the fucking jingle again for you. Don't ask me to do it. Next week, we're going to do another artist from Izu. I haven't decided which yet, but I'll also be telling the now infamous Borgore and G-Eazy story, which is a lot of fun and, you know, a personal favorite amongst my my close circle where I tell these stories. Thanks for listening, y'all, and stay safe.